On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
Welcome to the Ron Van Dam Show. Hold on tight, things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing. Whatever.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the blah, 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 blah show. Oh, boy. Oh, boy. You know, I was thinking about what I was in a previous life. Do you ever think about that? Do you know people and psychics? Do you know psychic people who say that, you know, this is not the first lives that we've had? To which most of us say, you've got to put down the drugs. I say, no, it's not drugs. It is that they believe that we have a series of lives, like cats or something, and that we had previous lives, you see. And that's why when you meet somebody in the street and you talk to them and you say, I know you from somewhere. No, we've never met. You're so familiar. And then there's that famous line, we must have known each other in another life. And of course, the person says to themselves within their mind, You're fucked. You, another life. What are you talking about? What's wrong? Get away from me. Get away from me now. But people do believe that. And they really think that the connections that you make in this life are due to things that happened in another life. And the things that happen in another life are directly related to what happens in this life, even though that's not your other life. That was the life before. So it wasn't my previous life. It was like six lives ago. No, wait, it was the seventh life ago. It wasn't the sixth life ago. That's when I was somewhere else. It was the seventh life. No, it wasn't the seventh life. That was when I drowned in Lake Placid. No, that's not it. It must have been the third life, actually. It was the third life when I was a fisherman. Yeah, that's what it was. And I had caught the whale and, that was a fourth life. What do I know you from? I think it's quite obvious. It was 20 lives ago. Bob. Yes. Sydney. Yes. Oh, it's so good to see you again. You too. You haven't changed a bit. Oh, you either. You either. So we play these little games, you know, to explain our existence. We have to explain our existence because you have to. You have to. We're human beings. Everything has to be explained. This generation more than ever. So that's what it is. This is not our first life. We were here previously. We just don't remember that well. But little things will pop up. Like we'll recognize people and we'll go, you know, I can't believe that I can sing that well. I must have been a singer in a previous life.
Oh, you were. You were. You were very, very famous in the Middle Ages. You were known as the singer, and you would go around singing in the different kingdoms.
I thought so. I thought so. Because where else could this talent come from but from having it before?
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah. I remember when I was a dinosaur roaming the earth, and I was looking for some claw meat, and I remember that now. Now I remember that. You remind me of that. You that refreshes my memory about that time in my life when I was a dinosaur. I couldn't masturbate or anything because my arms were too short. I remember that, man. That I'll never forget because that was frustrating as hell. I'd have to have other dinosaurs do it for me, and you don't know where they've been. They could have been in the mud pit all day. You don't know. You don't know. You don't know.
And we make excuses with that stuff. So I think I know what I was in a past life. I really do. And I don't know how far back it goes, because my memory of all my past lives are not that, like, available to me at this time. I should have written it down. I should have written down my past lives so that I could have taken a book with me. Here's what I think, though. I get an immense pleasure out of watching other people work. I don't know what that is. I don't know what that is. When I lived in New York City, they have a lot of construction sites, and they'd be building these incredible skyscrapers and buildings, and they had little plastic holes in the fence or the, you know, temporary walls on the sidewalk, and you could look through these little plastic windows and watch the construction workers work and watch these trucks bring in the dirt and the dump trucks and the bulldozers and people with hard hats walking around, you know, like nothing's going to fall on them. It's just like, what you do, it's, you know, it's like, it's what you do. I'm a construction worker, I wear a hard hat. And you're walking around, you have big gloves and things, and people are bending over and doing stuff. And here's the other thing about construction workers. Half of them are really fat, and I don't understand why. If I were working all day, like from 6 in the morning until 6 at night, I figure like within a couple of weeks, I'm gonna look like Hercules or something, man. But they don't. They don't. I don't know. Maybe they go out drinking every night and putting beer in their belly. But even still, you think you'd work that off, like 12 hours of hard labor a day? Come on. But no, not really. A lot of them are a little chunky. Little chunky. Not all of them, but some of them. Enough of them for me to say this. But I enjoy watching them work. They all know what they're doing. They take great satisfaction in their craft, whatever their craft may be. And I just stare at them. I just stare at them and go, oh, whoa, this is like somehow satisfying to me. They're not working for me. They're working for somebody else. They're working on a construction building. They're landscaping somebody else's home. I don't know what they're doing. But it just, I'm fascinated by their ability to work. One might say, Ron, that's because you don't appear to work at all. One might say that. Two might say that. Hell, five people may say that. I don't know. But something says to me that in a previous life, if we're going to go down that path, I must have been a king or a prince or something, or fluffy prince. Or I must have been a king. Because I feel like I should be sitting in a throne or on a throne, and just watching people and getting great satisfaction out of watching them work. And I know that's pathetic, and I know that's very sorry, and it's very mindless and all that, but that's what I'm feeling, man. That's what I'm feeling. And I've been told that by psychics. I cross the path of psychics every once in a while, like black cats. When I'm walking under a ladder, there's the cat, there's the psychic. And they say to me, you had a past life when you were a king sitting in a throne. And I said, yeah, I don't know how you picked that up, but it's absolutely true, probably. I don't have any proof of it. You don't have any proof of it, but it's a fun game we can play. So anyway, so after a while, I got into these ghost shows on television where they have a team of paranormal investigators. And again, they're usually a little chunky, even though they're walking around a lot through haunted houses. And they go to penitentiaries that have been shut down decades ago, where inmates were murdered and tortured and horrible things happened to them. And, you know, they got their heads caught in machinery, that kind of stuff. Or the paranormal investigation team will go to a hotel where someone was murdered in room 327, and the one in 328 wasn't feeling too good either. And or they go into a haunted theater where on stage at night the ghosts come out and they do scenes from La Boheme. I really don't know what they do. All these freaky places that these paranormal teams go to. And there's quite a few of these quote-unquote ghost shows. One of the best right now that I kind of like, and it's for entertainment purposes. I don't know if I necessarily believe. I'd like to believe in it. They're entertaining. They're entertaining. They're chilling. It's like watching a horror film where no one's really getting diced up or anything. Ghost Asylum is a bunch of Southern guys who aren't the typical Southern guys. They don't walk around going, Zeke, can you go get the tractor and see if you can catch a ghost on the back of that man? And I'm going to go down and take myself a little Southern nap, you know. They don't talk like that. They just have a slight Southern accent. They seem rather intelligent. Not that people that talk the way that I just demonstrated are not intelligent. They just don't sound intelligent. But these guys do. And they actually, on every show, they create a ghost trap where they think that they can trap the actual spirit of the ghost and release it into the wild. I have no idea what they do with it once they catch it or once they think they catch it. But they actually, on this show, they actually capture a lot of actual video footage of these shadow ghosts and things moving around that they don't have on other shows. On most of these ghost shows, I don't know if you watch them or not. You probably don't. You probably know what the hell I'm talking about. Most of these ghost shows, they're very lame. They're very boring. They're very superficial. They're kind of like not real. And they make stuff up. Yes, they do. Yes, they do. Yes, they do. Because basically, when you walk into a haunted house, most of the time, 99.9% of the time, nothing's going to happen. I actually did a series of supernatural shows with Mike Lutton, who was my producer friend. And we went into four different haunted locations in the New England area. One of them seemed indeed to be somewhat haunted. Some stuff happened. The other three, absolutely nothing. One of the places we went to and spent the night was the Lizzie Borden house. Now, you can actually spend the night there in the room where the mother got killed, which is just a wonderful experience. It's just delightful. But there are people who do that. There are people who like that. But we went in with a camera crew and an investigative team and a psychic, and we actually spent most of the night there. We didn't sleep overnight. And we went into all the rooms, and we conducted all kinds of investigations, and we captured no voices, nothing moving, no scary things, no chill feelings, not much going on. The psychic revealed some stuff about Lizzie Borden that hadn't really been revealed before, but was indeed able to be verified. So that was kind of interesting. But other than that, nothing happened in that house whatsoever. So there you go. We went to a couple of haunted restaurants, a haunted bar, a haunted hotel. Very fascinating. But most of the time, absolutely nothing happens whatsoever, period. So, you know, on these ghost shows, of which there are many competing against each other, that they have to sensationalize what they have, which is nothing. And it's humorous to me at times, because there's a show called Ghost Hunters, which was the original one on the Sci-Fi Network. And that's still on the air, but it's gone through different incarnations and different personnel. But, you know, it's still the first one. But it's turned into a very hokey, stupid thing. Here's what happens, man. They go into a house that's like over 100 years old, and they're walking through it, and all of a sudden, they hear a creak, like a coming from the floorboards or something like that. And one of the ghost investigators turns to the other and says, "That must be the ghost of Roger Williams." And they go, "Oh my God, Roger, can you hear me?" And then you listen long enough and you hear a little pounding, a little thing. And they go, "Oh, he hears me. He hears me. He's walking around. There's footsteps upstairs." You know, give me a break. The house is 100 years old. The damn thing creaks. What are you talking about? Houses creak. Houses have knocking sounds. They do. They settle. The wood parts on a humid day, on a rainy day, whatever, man. Don't go crazy. Then all of a sudden the door slams. "Oh, it's the ghost of Roger slamming the door." "No, it's not. It was a gust of wind, you asshole." So, you know, it's just, I laugh at that stuff. I think it's really funny. And then they capture these things called EVPs, which are little recordings you have on these little digital recorder things you fit in the palm of your hand. And apparently you can hear things on there. It records things that you can't hear with the human ear. There's certain things I wish I couldn't hear with the human ear, but you know how that works. So they'll go through an investigation and they'll go to their little lab there, their little discovery room, and they'll listen to the recordings and they'll try to do the best they can to make it sound like there's a ghost, but there really isn't. So they'll say things like, Roger, if you're in this room, can you hear me? And then there's dead silence, and then you hear something like, and they're like, oh, maybe someone's got gas or something. That's what it sounds like. Sounds like one of the ghost investigators has a little gas bubble, and it made a little, you know how your stomach makes a little noise? It goes, yeah. So, but they think this is a ghost or something, but they actually try to interpret what the ghost has said, you know. Did you hear that? I said, Roger, can you hear me? And we heard, yeah, you know what that sounds like? I am dead now. Oh, I can't believe it. Yes, that's exactly what it sounds like. I am dead now. It doesn't sound anything like I am dead now. It sounds more like gas in your stomach is what it sounds like. It's just all so silly. However, that doesn't mean that it doesn't possibly actually exist in certain circumstances. Now, I don't know. I've never seen a ghost. If I did, it would probably freak the hell out of me. But I haven't. But certain people do. Certain people apparently have this sense about them where they are more sensitive to what's going on than I am. As a matter of fact, anybody would probably be more sensitive to what's going on than I am. Because I suppose they just give a shit. I really don't know the difference. I really don't. But anyway, on our show today, we are going to speak to a woman whose husband died early on in life at a younger age. And she claims that he has come back from the other side to contact her numerous times in many obvious physical evidence ways. And we're going to talk to her. And it'll be fairly fascinating. It's a true story of life beyond death. Her name is Janice Heafy Durham, D-U-R-H-A-M, Janice Heafy Durham. She's going to join us a little bit later in the program and tell us about her experiences. She wrote a book about it. The subject matter itself is quite skeptical, although as soon as you turn your head to the sky at night and see all the stars and realize that beyond those there are galaxies and there are tons of things going on, you have to say to yourself that existence is simply not watching the gardener spread mulch across the street. There's more to it. There could be other dimensions. I know it sounds very science fiction kind of weird stuff, but if you have the attitude, just because I can't see it, smell it, taste it, or feel it, therefore it does not exist, well, that's not true, because most people believe in God, and most people have not seen, smelled, tasted, or whatever the case may be. It is a belief that you have. You believe the things that other people have told you about that subject, and you go with it because it gives you comfort. And I assume that when one's loved one passes away, you are desperately searching for some type of comfort, such as still having contact with that very person who is no longer in your life. I do believe in incredible feats of magic that the mind plays upon you. And I use the term plays because the mind can conjure things that do not necessarily exist. I'm not saying that it's an explanation for everything, but it's an explanation for some. When you have a trauma like the loss of a loved one, I believe that the mind can chemically become imbalanced, and I believe that you can start to see things. I believe that certain areas of high voltage can actually create manifestations, that you think you're seeing something, but you don't. Mirages appear in the desert, which is both a physics situation that has to do with the atmosphere being heated at a certain degree, and it also is a psychological deprivation of water and what you need to think clearly. There are explanations for not everything, but most things, and I do believe that the mind is that powerful. I do believe that there are people who have extraordinary minds who can reason, think, and see things that we cannot see. Whether someone can see things occurring from another dimension, if that exists at all, I don't know. I assume not, but only with my logical mind do I assume not. So what I've learned is to keep an open mind, not just to sit here and be a skeptical asshole, although I am one of those people, unfortunately, that kind of has to be physically shown something in order to actually believe it. The problem is, in this day and age, everything can be manifested in a superficial manner with videos. I mean, I don't believe any video I see. I know that you can take any moving images and create these moving images. You can overlay them onto reality simply by what we see in the movie theaters, these feats of realism, which are not real at all. They are created by an artist, by a graphic artist, these things that do not exist. So how could I ever again believe a video? I went to a photography seminar, which is a little bit off subject here, but it kind of proves how nothing is necessarily what it seems. To photography seminar, because I'm into photography every once in a while, because life is beautiful, and to capture it on a film or digital crap, whatever it is fascinating and rewarding. To capture those moments in time and freeze them is kind of cool. I mean, a lot of people are into photography for that very reason, and the composition thereof and such. There is a talent involved. So I go to this big photography club that took place in the lovely town of Quincy, city of Quincy. I don't know what the hell it is. And so people live there. That's all I know. And there's this photography club, and I was a guest, and I sat in. There was a guy talking about Photoshop. Everybody talks about Photoshop. As soon as you walk into place, it's Photoshop. It's Photoshop. You go to Photoshop. Hi, it's Photoshop. Photoshop. And this guy had been on a trip to the Colorado area of our country and had taken some beautiful photographs, and he was going to show us about 30 of them until we got bored and fell asleep. It's like watching somebody else's baby pictures, as far as I'm concerned. Maybe for real enthusiasts, this would have been vastly interesting. For me, it was as boring as watching paint dry. Anyway, he's explaining his photographs, and he has this lovely, lovely photograph of a mountain, and in front of it is this crystal blue a lake with a mist coming off of it. And it was very, very impressive, very impressive. And everybody's going, "That's wow, that is really something." He says, "Yes, I've won a number of prizes for this particular screenshot that I did." And what I did here was I took the water and I made it much bluer with the Photoshop, so it had more of a clean, crisp, a blue feel to it. And then I added a mist that was coming off of the water, which gave it the mysterious feel. And I kind of colored in the top of the mist to match the mountain. I said, "Wait a minute. Now, wait a minute." I didn't yell it out or anything, but in my mind I was going, "Now, wait a minute. What I'm looking at is not a picture that you actually took. It is not a photograph that you took." "Oh, I took the photograph, but I altered it." "Yeah, I mean, the water wasn't blue enough and didn't seem to be enough of it, so I kind of added a little bit more water on the sides in order to make it more grandeur." Wait a minute. This doesn't exist as I see it. "Well, it exists. There was a lake and there was a mountain. I enhanced it. I enhanced the size of the lake and the color of the lake and kind of filled in the mist, but yeah, that was all there already." "You charlatan pig. You. And I was pissed. And I never went back to this photography club because I'm saying to myself, is this what it's come down to? Is this how life has passed me by? When I look at a photograph in a magazine, I'm not looking at the photograph in the I'm looking at something that was created. Well, yeah, Ron, you ever see a beautiful model on the front of a magazine? They don't really look like that. I know, they put makeup on it. No. It's not makeup. They're actually sculpting their body through the picture. They're photoshopping their thighs and they're making them slim. They are buffing down their face and making it look soft skin when it's really not. You're lying to me. No, we're not lying. This is an art. An art. You know better than a magician on stage. When I see a magician on stage, I know I'm going to be watching stuff that this magician is creating in order to trick my mind and trick my eyes to make me wonder how things appeared out of thin air, etc., or disappeared. But I know I'm watching a magic show. That's the difference. Here is a magic show. I'm watching a magic show. But when I'm watching slides or reading a magazine, there's nothing there that tells me that what I'm looking at is magic. But it is. It's not real. You've touched it up. We use the term touched it up like, it's what it is. We just altered it and we touched it up. So we feel like touching it up is not. Look, if you fuck with the picture at all, it's not the picture you took. That's my rule.
No, all I did was touch it up.
You fucked with it is what you did. Let's be honest. You say touch, I say fuck. You say banana, I also say banana, to be honest with you. You say tomato, I say tomato. You say potato, I say potato. You say cucumber, I say cucumber. So it is different. It is different. But that blew my mind. That blew my mind. And that's my funny story.
And that was another funny story from Ron. Wait, that was supposed to be funny? Wow.
You are listening to The Ron Van Dam Show. Don't worry, no one has to know. This is just between you and me and Ron. We cool?
So here's the funny thing. Yeah.
What are you wearing? What are you wearing? What are you wearing today? Today? What are you wearing? What are you wearing? What are you wearing today? Today?
All right. I usually don't say what day it is. This is the 1st of May. It's May. The April shower shit is all finished. This is May now. This is when the flowers are out. It's supposed to be one of those months that you actually have beautiful weather. It's May, right? I'm looking out the window and there's kids wearing winter coats because it's about like 48 degrees outside. And it's early. I mean, maybe the temperature's supposed to get up to maybe 48 or 50 or 55. I don't really know. I don't really follow the weather thing. But they're wearing sweaters. I mean, maybe not winter coats. Maybe I was exaggerating. Maybe I was photoshopping my words. But they're wearing sweaters, and it's just kind of, for me, if there was a weather report and they said today in Colorado, they got like 6 inches of snow on the first day of May, you know what? I think most of us would go, yeah, and so what? Yeah, okay, yeah. It's May and it's snowing somewhere. Yeah, so what? Now I'm conditioned where, yeah, it can snow anytime because this is just like, it's the way it is now. It's the way it is. So it's always going to snow. It's always going to snow. It's always going to be cold. It's always going to snow. And I know that in about a month or so, it'll be like 90 degrees and I'll be sweating my balls off. And actually, they never really came off with sweat. That's an expression. They never really... detach because of the heat. Just so you know, some of you girls don't know that because you don't know what's going on down there. You don't even know what the hell those things are. They don't detach. They just become like really itchy. Anyway, that's what I'm not wearing.
What are you wearing? What are you wearing? What are you wearing today, today? What are you wearing? What are you wearing? What are you wearing today, today?
All right, let's speak to our feature guest for today. She is fascinating. Janice Heafy Durham has written a book called The Hand on the Mirror, and she'll explain why she named it that. It's a true story of life beyond death. Let's speak to Janice. This is fascinating stuff here. Janice Heafy Durham joins us now. She's the author of a very interesting book called The Hand on the Mirror. It's a fascinating story, and let's get right into it. Good morning to you, first of all.
Good morning, Ron.
This all began when a very unfortunate occurrence happened in the family. Can you tell us about that?
Yes, my husband, Max Bessler, was diagnosed with esophageal cancer, and within 6 months, we lost him.
All right. And that people lose family members, well, everybody does, but this was a little bit different. Apparently, his passing, things were different than usual. I understand there were clues, physical evidence of the fact that things were not going to be normal here.
That's correct. It was astonishing what happened. Many events occurred that were what I consider to be after-death communications. And I would call myself a real skeptic. I was publisher of the Sacramento Bee newspaper here in Northern California for 10 years. And as such, you know, was happy to say that under my watch we won 2 Pulitzers. So we were a serious, and the paper still is, a serious investigative reporting newspaper with a very good reputation. So I didn't think about this. I didn't ever have any association with anything mystical. I would call myself the opposite, fact-based. Now, what started to happen, though, after just about a week, clocks would stop and lights would flicker and doors would open and shut, and I pretty much rationalized all that. In my mind, I thought, you know, I must be grief-ridden and, you know, just pass it off.
Right.
One year to the date of the death of Max, was Mother's Day, 2005, May 8th. My son and I were out in the backyard. It was a beautiful sunny day doing our home. He was doing homework. I was doing my work on the paper. And I went in to wash my hands because it was time for a sandwich. I used the bathroom that's right next to the kitchen, which is also adjacent to the guest bedroom where Max resided at the end of his life, because that was where he was most comfortable and he was so very ill. I started to wash my hands, looked up at the mirror, and I saw a very large handprint, perfectly formed, a powdery handprint, affixed to the mirror. And my eyes said, "What is that?" Uh-huh. My eyes saw it. My mind said, "You must be imagining this." It was a disconnect between what I knew that I saw, but I couldn't find a way to understand it or rationalize it. I immediately called my son to come in. He was 14.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, "Tanner, what do you think?" And for a moment, of course, I thought, okay, did my son play a trick here somehow?
Mm-hmm.
His hands were much smaller. This was a large hand. Mm-hmm. And you could see all the bone structure, all the facets of the of the bones in the mirror. And it was astonishing.
He
ended up coming back on each anniversary. There were powdery handprints for 3 years in a row, 05, 06, 07. Now, I was publisher of the newspaper at the time, and I was not about to get into this and investigate this in my role at the paper. And also, I was just coping with the grief primarily the first year when I saw it, so I set it aside. Eventually, I decided that I had to do what I had experienced throughout my entire career, which was investigate and research. And that's what the book's about. It's my journey talking to scientists and spiritual practitioners alike to understand the basic question I had, which is, does our consciousness survive death? Is there more? And that's the story. That's what the book is about. And I came out, as you can well imagine, on the side of there is more.
Right.
And I don't believe you can prove this. I'm not out to convince people. I'm just out to tell my story. And I believe I have what I would call evidence of the fact that there is more.
Was your son, a year later, the first to see this as well as you did? In other words, prior to that, these were only messages to you that no one else had seen?
He experienced much of what happened. When the clock stopped, for example, he was there at the clock stopped the exact time of Max's death.
Right.
The first week after the very, week to the day after he passed, Tanner was home and saw that in the morning. And the handprint he saw, and my housekeeper who came a few days later, I kept it up for a few days, she saw it. So I had witnesses along the way, and things progressed, and I, over time I remarried, and my husband, who's very much an engineer, accountant, an MBA, he's just a real fact-based guy. He initially said, I don't know about this, but if you were to speak with him now, he's absolutely convinced, because we also had, and he witnessed with me, rugs moving and footprints on the, on the chair.
Was there any change in activity after you had been married and someone... Did your new husband move into the same house?
No, we actually... We moved out of that house and moved into a home in Idaho, and these occurrences were in that home
they
in Idaho. Yep, and I also had things happen in a Napa home that I had as a vacation home, and all that's in the book, but I think whatever was going on here was following me as opposed to part of the house.
Yes. Were you ever scared by this, or was it from the beginning a comfort?
I would say I was somewhere in between, because there was a part of me that was stunned, and that brought on some, a little bit of fear, I suppose. But I always felt it was Max. And the hands in particular look so much like his. Any woman knows the shape of her husband's hands.
Yes.
It's a close and intimate part of the person. So I knew he would never do anything that would be anything but positive. So I was never really afraid.
Okay. Are you a religious person in the sense of going to a church, synagogue, whatever the case may be?
Well, I was born the daughter of a Presbyterian minister.
Mm-hmm.
So I was raised in what we call a manse in the Presbyterian church next door to the church. So I have a very much solid foundation, a traditional upbringing in the Midwest by a very, very religious man whom was probably the most important person in my life as far as influence. And so I have a traditional Christian background. I still believe in God, and I believe that I call it the power of and. I believe in God, and I believe in the spiritual realm. Okay.
But so, in other words, what's happening here with the spiritual realm has nothing to do with your religious beliefs. This is a separate circumstance, a separate dimension kind of thing.
Yeah, I would say that's good characterization.
Do these occurrences still persist?
No.
Oh, they don't?
No.
What do you think the changing point was?
It's so hard to know what that is, but I feel this strongly. I wrote this book because I believe Max did figure out a way to reach over. And if he'd done so, I knew I had to do my part.
Uh-huh.
So I see it almost as if he passed it to me, and I took it.
Okay.
And that was why I wrote the book, and now this is going to be out, and I think that was what it was about, and now he's accomplished that. And the last thing I'll add to that point is that along the way, many people told me stories, and that's also why I wrote the book. I want people to feel free and open in our society
to be able to
have this discussion.
The book is called The Hand on the Mirror. And it's a true story, beyond life and death. Is there a website we can follow?
I'm sorry, what's that?
Is there a website that we can follow?
Yes, thank you for asking. It's thehandonthemirror.org.
Great. Janice, we're running out of time. Janice Heffey Durham, fascinating book, fascinating subject, opens up things, possibilities for everybody. Thank you so much for your time this morning.
Thank you, Ron.
Take care. Huh. Well now. I don't know. I guess there, it's an individual thing. It's the truth for you. And I don't know. But it is fascinating. Kids, we're done for today. You know, the time we spend together is very precious. Very, very precious, you know. It's precious in many ways. Well, maybe not in any of them, but some ways it is precious. It's a time that we can spend together, or I do all the talking and you just shut up. That's precious, man. That's precious. But you don't have to talk, as you say. You don't. It's not an opinion-driven show. I don't care what you think. And I know deep down in your soul, you don't care what I think either. And I think that's what makes our relationship so special and so perverted. And who knows? Maybe in a next lifetime, we'll be doing something else. Maybe I'll be a gardener or a landscaper, and maybe you'll be the king. But not this time. Not this time. There's a long road in front of us, a road with dreams, aspirations, food. And somewhere along that road, there's something that's handing us water so that we can take a sip, rejuvenate ourselves, and go further. Like a marathon runner, so are we, going down that path together, running side by side. Your feet hurt, my feet hurt. And sometimes, that's about all we have in common. I wish you peace.